beam on board for May's biggest event.
There's a vessel coming through the rift.
Klingon?
Federation.
The final episode of Voyager.
7 of 9 is going to die.
My death would be a small price to pay.
Will they make it home?
To quote Ambassador Spock, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
We're not going to attempt this unless everyone in this room agrees.
Stop her!
Voyager will be destroyed.
The Star Trek Voyager series finale. A 2-hour television event.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton having a sexy picnic in the cargo bay.
And we have a very special guest with flour in his hair and a gravelly voice, Scott Hardy.
Hello again, beaming in from sunny London, England, although today we are in Las Vegas.
And this must be the hottest weather any of us have ever experienced in our lives at this point.
And speaking of heat, we're going to talk about the Chakotay 7 romance when we talk this week about Endgame, the finale to Star Trek Voyager. We've reached the end of the road for Voyager. This is our final bit of coverage for these two-parters or extended-length episodes. So let's dive into it.
I'm curious about how this one is as a finale wrapping up the Voyager arc over 7 seasons. And there's a moment later on in this two-part... Well, it's not a two-parter. It's a
extended length.
It's a feature-length episode, essentially, where... And, you know, spoiler alert, we'll be doing that. Harry Kim essentially says, to the journey. And I think that moment actually struck me quite a bit. You know, I'm not a destination person when I'm watching television.
Right.
For me, it's the journey that matters. And I guess what I'm thinking about is like all these little adventures that we went on with the Voyager crew and if it was worth it and how Endgame wraps it all up. And that's one thing that really struck me. It's a little cheesy, that moment, but it kind of worked for me. And I'm wondering about what your take is, what you're looking for going in for a finale from Star Trek Voyager, which was, funnily enough, the most destination-oriented Star Trek series up until this point, because it was essentially a crew lost from home on their way home. And I'm wondering how this journey versus destination argument stacks up for both of you guys. Scott, what's your thought here?
I mean, in terms of Voyager itself, or how the finale wraps it all up, do you mean?
What were you looking for a finale when it came to Voyager? And maybe how, in a broad sense, how did that differ from what you maybe got? Or maybe it was exactly lined up with what you wanted?
I mean, it was a tough thing to do. They were nowhere near home before this episode happened, and then they had to find a way to get them from halfway through the Delta Quadrant back to Earth in an hour and a half. That's a tough art thing to do for anyone, so they had to really write this. And in terms of how they delivered, I think they did okay. Not sure they knocked it out of the park, but I feel like they delivered what they needed to do, which was get the Voyager home by the end of the episode.
Yeah. Cam...
Twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. When we sat down to watch this, you know, what was your experience like? Did you have, like, particular hopes, anticipations for what this could deliver?
I think the problem with Voyager is when I look at Deep Space Nine, the finale of that, I know going into it what it is wrapping up. Like, I understand, like, the Dominion War, we are going to get the climax of that and how these characters resolve, you know, their lives going forward. With Voyager, there's no sense that they're that close to home when you're, like, an episode before the finale. So it's like, you assume they're getting home, but other than that one sentence logline of, they get home, there's no real sense of, like, what is going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel like an organic continuation of the episodes through season 7.
So maybe does that speech with Harry Kim resonate at all when he's talking about what really matters throughout the last 7 years we've been watching isn't the destination, though. It's the journey that we've all experienced.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just for Harry Kim and crew. I think it's also for the actors, for everyone involved with the show. It has a little bit of a meta-narrative to that line. It's how this, you know, group of very different individuals who got together and got along pretty quickly, managed to keep that family together through 7 seasons.
Except for Kes.
Except for Kes.
So my own experience watching it as it aired, I remember I was still a teenager. I was talking to my family like, yep, it's the series finale of Voyager. It's on tonight. And my dad and my brother sat down and watched the first half of it with me.
Yeah.
And they're bored and confused out of their minds that they got up and left after about an hour.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this works for audiences as like a one-off. I think you've got to be invested in what's going on here. The characters and the story and the background about what's going on here. So for me, it was an interesting experience. Kind of seen it through the lens of people that weren't super familiar with all of the Voyager lore. Were you were
Lore's in TNG.
I'm sorry, my mistake there. But when you were watching it, Scott, you were watching it like as it was airing, right?
Yeah, so what happened with Voyager and sort of Star Trek in the United Kingdom was originally it was playing on the BBC, which is sort of terrestrial television or free television in North America. And then in the last season of Voyager, it moved on to, I guess, what you guys would call cable.
Okay.
So we used to get it a day or so after the US would play.
That's much better than the UK usually get. Wouldn't you guys have to wait like 9 months or something?
Yeah, for the VHSs, which is how we originally got it, and then it would play on TV, it would be about 6 months between.
Okay.
You guys are still waiting for the animated series.
I still haven't seen Enterprise yet. Is it any good?
Wait for that finale discussion.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. But I mean, in terms of like the viewing experience, it was me and my brothers all sat down and watched it in the upstairs room. We were all quite big Star Trek fans, and we really enjoyed it at the time. It felt like a really nice way of wrapping it up. But then obviously watching it back in later years, I was, I don't know, 10, 12, what year did this air?
2001?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was 14 at the time this aired. I'm looking at it from a different perspective now. And I'm not sure I enjoyed it as much as I did as a kid.
It's interesting, though. And maybe we can dive into some of the stuff that worked for us, some of the stuff that didn't work. Yeah. Cam, was this latest viewing that you just did about maybe a few days ago, was this your second viewing of
that
the
Endgame?
That
was my second, yeah.
What was your experience like the first time that you watched this, what, maybe 3-4 years ago?
Right, yeah. So Voyager was the last of the Star Trek shows that I watched, with the exception of obviously Discovery, you know, it went on the air later. But at that point, that was the last of the series I completed. And so I had a pretty good background knowledge on all the other finales. You know, I knew Turnabout Intruder had set the bar so high that it would be very difficult for another show to ever top that. But
so high in your eyes.
That's right. Yes, that's yes. Right.
He speaks not for the rest of our people talking today.
I read the synopsis and I'm like, no Janice Lester? The hell with this. But no, like I went into it and, you know, I really did have maybe unfair expectations, because when I look at the Berman era, yes, Enterprise really dropped the ball, but I look at All Good Things.
Like, the thing that we should point out is you had watched Are the Voyagers before you watched Endgame.
Correct. Yeah, which is a disaster. But, I mean, All Good Things, and then also What We Leave Behind.
What You Leave Behind.
Yeah, What You Leave Behind. Thank you. That documentary has forever screwed me
up. I know,
forever. But, yeah, like, those two had such an impact on me. Like, they were not just great episodes, you know, like, as finales, but just great episodes across the bar. Like, they're, like, top-ranking episodes in their series.
For sure. Like, all of them are, like, top tens, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally. And so I went
especially into Turnabout Intruder.
But when I went into the Endgame, I really did expect more of that, because I felt like the Berman Factory, especially at that point in time, really had things nailed down in terms of how to do a finale. And
did Brandon Braga did not have a writer's credit on this one? I don't believe
that. He had a story credit.
He had a story credit. So he's had, you know, his fingers on AGT, All Good Things. Yeah. These Are the Voyages, and other favorite of yours as
sure,
well. So
yeah.
It's just interesting to think about him, about like how much of his own influence that he's imparted on the finales of the Berman era.
Right. And so I sat down and watched it, and I did not have strongly negative feelings about it. I did enjoy watching it, but it didn't have, and this kind of goes against what the creators wanted. Their intention was to create something that was epic in scope. But I remember when I watched it, it felt much... Look, they obviously were spending more money, but it felt, in terms of its impact, smaller to me than All Good Things or What You Leave Behind. And I was like, it's fine. Like, it told me the end of the story. It wrapped up the villain arc with the Borg Queen. So I can't complain feeling like there's loose ends left, like Enterprise, where it's just like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
But it did feel a little too much like All Good Things. Like, there's a lot of similarities that the creators were aware of. They're like, yeah, we knew. We knew we were inviting comparisons.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're going to do a second take on All Good Things like material, boy, you got to come out of the gate really swinging. And at the time, I thought this was a solid B episode, but it wasn't a home run.
Yeah. Okay. So look, we'll flash forward. It's been Is it weird to think it's been almost 20 years since this finale aired?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we flash forward
now. We got a whole new endgame now.
Take that, Thanos.
Yeah.
Would you like that if
sure.
Okay. He's the new Borg Queen?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's dive into maybe some of the stuff that maybe works for us, maybe didn't work here. But the thing that I kept asking myself was, like, where do we leave off the characters as we meet them in the future? And I almost wonder if this is kind of a flawed premise in the first place, where we spend, the first 25 minutes of this episode invested in an alternate timeline, where what I really want is to spend time with the characters that we know, that the characters that are completing their journey at this point. As silly as it might seem, though, I'm kind of curious what the deal is with Tom and B'Elanna's child.
Sure.
You know, like,
is it Meryl? Is that her name?
Take your word for it.
Sure.
But it's weird that we have to wait like 30 minutes until we get there. Meanwhile, we're spending a lot of time with old man Barkley.
Yeah.
And we're just like, okay. So what we do get a sense for is like where the characters are at this point in their lives, though. You know, B'Elanna is an envoy for the Klingon Empire. Tom is writing holo novels. Harry is a captain. Janeway is an admiral. Seven is dead.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Chakotay, he couldn't cope.
He could not cope. So there's a lot of things I was just kind of questioning. I don't... Okay, sorry. I don't think that was exactly established camp.
No, it wasn't.
No.
But okay. It did say he kind of lost all his way after...
He did, he did.
Yeah, he lost his way.
I don't blame him.
To the set.
Yeah. Tuvok's been experiencing, like, kind of this ongoing
like,
mental
kind of
breakdown.
Like, almost like Vulcan dementia of some
sort.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I was thinking like the storylines that I buy most, where the characters end up, is where the Doctor ends up. You know,
yeah.
He is like a married, very, you know,
yes,
married man who's very successful as like kind of an academic.
Yeah.
At this point, I buy where Janeway is as the admiral, and I buy where Harry is. But we debated a lot, Cam, before in the past where Tom and B'Elanna would end up, and I don't really see B'Elanna being like this envoy to the Empire, and I don't see Tom.
Yeah.
Kicking up his feet writing holodeck novels.
When, like, Worf went into the diplomatic kind of arena with Martok at the end of Deep Space Nine, you bought it because of his relationships with Martok and, like, Klingon
society. And his relationship to his own culture.
Exactly.
She was always somebody who pushed against her own culture, though. And I liked her for that.
Yes.
So it just rang false to me that that's where her character would end up.
Didn't she always strike you as someone who really, really liked engineering?
Yes.
Yeah.
But not diplomacy. So I would... Assume she would take over from one Colin Meaney as Dean of Engineering at Starfleet Academy.
Maybe when she had their child, she wanted something more stable.
Sure. But the child is now like a 26-year-old ensign at this point.
Well, old habits die hard once you've been in that career for 20-something years.
But Scott, where were you at where the characters, as we find them in the first 25 minutes of the episode, like how are you feeling about where the characters' journeys were led to believe ended?
Well, I mean, just jumping off from what you said about B'Elanna, even that, I mean, she was a Marquee member that joined the Voyager. Why is she working for Starfleet when she comes back? I could imagine that they were all forgiven of their crimes.
Like, what are
sure.
her principles?
Yeah. Why is she just abandoned that and joined up with the people she swore to fight against? I mean, yeah, the Voyager crew are her friends, but the rest of Starfleet necessarily weren't.
Well, that is actually an interesting question, because for a Voyager crew member, when you join, as a Marquee, when you join into the Voyager crew, that is that's like a small little section of Starfleet. But what happens when you get home and they're like, well, it's time to transfer you now, and you get into all the larger machinery of the Federation, does it still hold the same appeal? Like, she was Marquee for a reason.
Yeah, and she was also chief engineer aboard her own starship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if she's really looking forward to a future career in Starfleet at this point, though. But I don't know if, like, the diplomatic corps is really what I envisioned B'Elanna's future as.
And that's the thing is, like, Voyager never really gave B'Elanna that much of a journey on the show.
No.
I know.
So that's the problem, I think, with some of these career sum-ups in this opening, is that we didn't see the transition into this sort of lifestyle as much.
It just kind of feels like, I'm not saying they did this, but almost they thought, oh, what are they doing? Oh, B'Elanna's a diplomat, I guess. I don't know. Oh, Tom's writing stuff. Okay, cool. So Harry's a captain, sure, all right. And that was the thought process.
It kind of threw darts.
Bang, sure. None of them I can really think about make particular sense, except for maybe Admiral Janeway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder
that holds up.
What
I'd
we're
say.
Getting at, though, is it's an essentially flawed way to kick off your finale, spending so much time with a reality that we kind of know probably isn't going to come to fruition, because that would actually undercut the entire crux of what this story is, which, sure. in which some people are responsible for their ultimate destination, and that the Janeway, as a captain, as we know it, can have a sort of insight that maybe her older counterpart does not.
Here's the question, though. For people that are watching this finale and have this set up at the top, summing up what everyone has been doing, is it just, you know, to remove all thinking about the complications of it all, is it just fun? It's just something the viewers can go, oh, that's interesting. Oh, I never would have thought that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's a part of it.
It's like a what-if sort of scenario.
Yeah, sort of, yeah. But I mean, obviously they know it's not going to hold when, you know, Seven is gone and Chakotay's gone. Obviously, that's not going to be the way it is at the end, but...
I could be with that for 8 minutes, but why are they spending, like, the first act of this?
I agree. It is very long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something I'll come to later with Janeway's choices. It just feels a bit odd that they spent so much time digging into these characters. They knew when they were writing it that they were going to reverse all these choices anyway.
Yeah.
So why are we spending time with things that actually don't matter? Because they had how many more years in the Delta Quadrant?
It was like kind of a 30-year gap, and with regards to the amount of... I think they're in the Delta Quadrant another 23 years or something.
I thought it was
like
16.
That. 16 years. Okay. Yeah.
So sure, maybe 16 years changed B'Elanna, we'll use her as an example, into maybe more of a diplomat. Okay.
That's true. 16 years would change them.
We could buy that. But we never see that transition, and it doesn't mean anything because they change history anyway. So why are we spending 25, 35 minutes with people that actually don't matter?
I know. It's kind of a tough conceit to kick off your story with.
Mm.
I mean, I kind of hate to play the this is the way I would have done it game, but I do wonder if, in terms of long-term satisfaction, it might have worked a little better to have them encountering older Janeway, who kind of lays out this potential future that they're grappling with. And then at the end, when they get home, we flash forward to the reunion and kind of have this sweet goodbye with all these characters later. Well, I don't know.
Let me just pitch this. What if the teaser was essentially old Janeway coming back in time saying, hey, you need to close this rift. Just trust me on this.
But what do you think of like ending that then with sort of the where they went?
And then we jump forward and then we kind of like see what's been going on in the meantime. We could do a lot of like back and forth.
Sure.
I think I would be more invested as a viewer if that were the case. If that was the first like 30 minutes of this episode.
They did that with All Good Things. Back and forth the whole way through.
And is that kind of one of the fundamental issues, is just how similar these two finales are, though? Do we want to get
into... With like an aged version, alternate universe version of the captain?
I know. And we think about what are their greatest nemeses? Well, Q for Picard. And I guess you go with Borg Queen for Voyager, though, just as somebody who's been around for, you know, I guess like 3 seasons at this point. So
I was thinking the guy from Concerning Flight.
I was more of a Maj Kala sort of guy.
Maj Kala, yeah.
So... At this point, I just wonder if there was like a kind of an easy way to kind of turn this around and make us more invested from the get-go. Because I think it's kind of frustrating for us as viewers to be sitting there knowing that we only have like 90 minutes left with these people.
Yeah.
And these are not the characters that we've been following for 7 years. These are alternate versions of their characters.
And also just the fact, I don't hear a lot of complaints within the Star Trek community about Endgame. A lot of the people really love it. But the number one complaint you hear all the time is that the ending is very abrupt. And they want more of a resolution to the characters returning home. And you could have given that, I think, if you'd gotten to the front end of the story a little quicker.
And it was interesting because the writers, they were actually quick to acknowledge that right from the get-go. They were saying like, well, we thought that the reunion that people were pining for, we already kind of covered it with, you know, that kind of flashback.
You know, like 15 years ago, the USS Voyager returned and here are the fireworks that they got.
Yeah.
To me, I think that there is... this sort of this social compact to a certain degree that you have with the viewers, where you tell them this is a destination oriented series. What you can expect by the end is that the crew gets home, and from there you get some sort of, I don't know, you want to call it relief or satisfaction that you get to have the characters reunited with what they've been longing for. There's a very important moment about halfway through this where Harry and Tom are discussing whether they should go back into that nebula to help access this transwarp hub. And Harry's like, don't you want to get home? And Tom says, I'm already home.
Right.
That might be my favorite moment of the entire finale. And to me, it's something that really maybe sums up Tom's arc throughout the entire 7 seasons. That to me is like a very special moment in this finale.
Yeah. One thing, though, I just want to touch back to what you were saying about people want to see that experience of them getting home. You really want to deliver, though, I think, like, the Return of the Jedi ending, where you have the big finale, but you have that Ewok hangout session at the end set to score, so you get that kind of relief of, here are the characters, they've settled in, they're celebrating the end of the journey, credits. I do think you want that. But, yeah, in terms of Tom Paris, yeah, I mean, that's a character that's adrift a lot of the time. He's in the brig. he's often more interested in the holodeck or fixing cars than he is Voyager.
Watching cartoons on his old school television set.
Yes. So it makes sense to me that he's a guy who never really knew where he belonged.
Yeah.
I mean, he obviously didn't get along with his dad back home. And so, yeah, Voyager was like his kind of his home.
So doesn't it seem weird that we find him, you know, 30 years later and he's just kind of chill doing holodeck
schlumpy
novels? Yeah.
Like, if I were Robert Duncan McNeil, I would be looking at my makeup job and being like, what are you guys doing to me? Because you look at Garrett Wong, they put, as I, you know, I kind of mentioned in your intro there, Scott, like powder in his hair and
Silver Fox at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And he's kind of got like a gravelly voice.
Yeah.
And it's like, he looks pretty good still. Like, he looks, you know, like he's in shape. Whereas like Tom, they really made him look bad.
I think maybe Tom should have been the curator of the USS Voyager Museum that Admiral Janeway had alluded to. Because I see Tom as a curator. He was always our go-to source for 20th century pop culture knowledge.
Yeah.
I could see him as a museum curator in this sort of universe. I think he could have had more of an active role as future Tom Paris, too, if they went down that path. But
it links back to the whole, this is my home point. If he's showing people as his job in the future,
yeah,
this is my Voyager.
Yeah,
like, this is my home. Let me show all of you what we went through.
Yeah. For you, Scott, how does this kind of compare only from a story level with All Good Things? Is it a little too similar in format? Or does it not necessarily matter to you if they're telling like a good story that wraps up a lot of these character arcs?
I don't mind the same beats being in place if the resolution is ultimately well constructed and well implemented, I suppose is my outlook on it. They're using the time travel, the old people, that's all fine. I just think it misses on some sort of core levels of how it presented the story. Whereas I think All Good Things, it knocks it out of the park the whole way through.
Do you think with All Good Things, it benefited a lot from like that manic last-minute writing session process that it's known for? That like they were just going on like pure Red Bull and inspiration at the time?
Well, I mean, they were transitioning into Enterprise, weren't they, at this point? They were wrapping up Voyager. I imagine they were beginning to put together Enterprise.
I think, yeah, Brannon Braga left as showrunner and gave it to Kenneth Biller for season 7. And from that period, his energy was focused on developing Enterprise.
Yeah, whereas All Good Things, they had All Good Things being written, Generations, Deep Space Nine was in production, Voyager was somewhere in there as well.
It was in development too, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of Star Trek being created, much like, I suppose, nowadays, really. It's a comparable peak time. Whereas when Voyager was written, they more or less just had that to deal with, and yet they still didn't quite manage it as well as All Good Things.
Yeah, and I do wonder, the whole idea of this journey through time, you know, this back-and-forth narrative, when I look at TNG, it kind of makes more sense thematically with what the show is, because it's about the trial of humanity. And that is a never-ending journey. That's going to go the entire duration of Picard's life. So it makes sense to see him as an older man looking back and how this whole journey spoke about humanity. Mm-hmm. Voyager is a show about getting home. So I don't know that the bouncing around in time, having the older Janeway going back as a deus ex machina, like, that isn't thematically that really tied to getting home.
Also, the fact that your first moments are started at home.
Yes.
You know, so that kind of, like, takes away from a lot of the tension.
Yes.
The other thing that maybe we can touch on here, though, is that Janeway does bring up explicitly her caretaker decision. I think that is like kind of an important motivating factor that I do appreciate that they did bring up here.
Yeah.
Do you buy that as a motivating factor for Janeway in this, or do you think she kind of forgot about that for the most part? It has been brought up here or there over the years, but I don't know how much that was a legit motivating factor for one Captain Janeway in this particular contemporary time period.
Well, I like finales to bookend with the premiere, so I like that they did that.
Yeah.
I have to believe, though, that after Janeway blew up the array and they wound up lost in the Delta Quadrant, I'm sure privately there was many a days where she was like, if I had only not done that.
I think she just really wanted to break up with Mark
And sure.
This is the easiest way to ghost him in the 24th century.
Sure. Yeah.
So.
But they spent the whole episode dealing with that. Mark? Wasn't? Yeah, with Mark. Did you not see that one?
The last episode.
Yeah. I can't remember that. I think it was a.
He's season... getting a spin-off from CBS soon.
Isn't everyone? Isn't it? It's like season 5 premiere when they're in the.
Are you talking about Night?
Night.
Yeah, yeah. When she's like stuck in her room, just right. Sort of. You know, I don't know, not PTSD, but she's dealing with depression.
And like grappling with kind of the journey that she set them on.
Yeah. I mean, that's Admiral Janeway's motivation partly, but she uses more like the 7 of 9 Chakotay factor to really push the narrative on that side.
Probably because she knows what she can use to manipulate herself.
Yeah.
You know, and we know that there's this very motherly relationship between Janeway and Seven. And so to say you lost Seven due to your actions... I can help you fix this.
I think that's a very interesting thing that she plants inside of her predecessor's mind.
I remember when I watched this one the first time, I was partly convinced halfway through or whatever, however many, 2/3 through, that Admiral Janeway was going to be like, had gone evil or something. Like that Admiral Janeway did not have necessarily great motivations.
Well, that was very much my memory of it. Like when I was sitting back and watching it now,
yeah.
I kind of thought like, okay, so when does Admiral Janeway have the heel turn?
Yeah.
She doesn't really. I actually understand what her motivations are throughout. But she also comes off as a bit of an antagonist to a certain degree,
definitely.
Which is interesting. Mm-hmm. When I think the Borg Queen is supposed to be the primary antagonist.
She's barely in it, though. A couple shots of her, like, watching a view screen being like, yep, I'm going to be watching that ship. And then she shows up at the end. Probably because Alice Kriga didn't want to wear that suit for very long. I think they shot her stuff pretty quick.
She maybe did 2 days of work,
yeah,
which is okay.
Not much. Yeah. Whereas, like, when you look at All Good Things... John Delancey's there a lot as yeah. Q. Like, they are very much working him into the entire narrative of what this story is.
He loves the robe, that's why.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas if you don't have your villain to do that with here, I think that Admiral Janeway serves that kind of antagonistic function.
Which, you're still putting a lot of makeup and costuming on, you know, your lead of the series.
But you can urinate in that suit.
Yes.
Which Alice Kriga, as she has said, could not.
I remember that conversation.
Yes. It
had to take me a beat to figure out what you're trying to relay to us.
Right.
Yeah.
Just comparing the sort of Janeway and Picard thing you mentioned there as well. If you look at sort of All Good Things, that's like a character study of Picard that we know at the end of season 7 and his choices, because he's influencing his own actions in the past and the future.
Right.
Whereas the sort of primary character that drives the story in Endgame is a future version of Janeway that ends up not actually, she won't occur. It's like a time paradox
right.
in
yeah.
itself. So
yeah.
you're rooting for someone who's essentially also being played as a bad guy at the same time. And your character that you know isn't really developing from it.
Yeah, because like a lot of, and this thing is very much broken into 2 45-minute chunks. Like it's broken into episodes.
Yeah.
Because the first half, you spend a lot of time with Admiral Janeway's, you know, stealth plans she's making, going on behind the scenes and then going off on this secret mission, all that stuff. We're investing ourselves in this, this alternate character who we guess probably won't exist. And it's not until the second 45 minutes where she's brought onto the ship with the rest of the crew, where now we get to actually spend time with the crew we know and see how they take control of the story themselves to get home. It's a very odd way to set up what is a very long journey. It's a 7-year journey for this ship.
Yeah.
And it falls into the hands of a character who is an entirely like outside actor.
But does Captain Janeway's one phrase that I'm going to recite here just tell you what a badass character our lead is, though, when she says, can't we have our cake and eat it too?
Yeah.
And she accomplishes it, though.
Yes, that's
she
great.
She tells her older self, I bet I can outthink you. I bet I can accomplish this mission to weaken the Borg and get ourselves home all in the same time. And as much as maybe I was anticipating the heel turn for a while, it was actually a pretty badass plan that both the Janeways came up with to sacrifice Admiral Janeway and dupe the Borg into thinking they had captured Admiral Janeway, and she was able to insert that pathogen within to the Borg collective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hence, it was actually a cool kind of sequence to watch kind of both Admiral Janeway and the Borg Queen deteriorate that way.
I'm curious from you two, were you excited at the time that the finale was a Borg story?
No, because I think by the time we get to Unimatrix Zero, I was like, the Borg stuff just seemed out of gas.
And they'd blown up the Borg Queen twice at that point?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could buy that they're going to blow her up a third time.
Sure.
I mean, from my perspective, if I'm looking back in the sort of 2001, did you say it was?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was very much into the Borg, and any story they had, I was happy with. I didn't really see it from the perspective of they're overplaying it or they're sort of killing the mystique of the Borg. I was just happy with the Borg story. I thought it was cool visuals. And that's all I really cared about at that point.
Well, Mystique is in the X-Men.
Oh, sorry. Wrong franchise. I'll leave. Thank
Jennifer
you.
Jennifer Lawrence did not want to do the makeup for the Borg Queen here.
Yeah.
So you were happy that we had a kind of a Borg story. Let's talk about maybe how they wrap up the Borg arc as we know it. This is the furthest in time that we've seen the Borg. I think the Star Trek Picard series is going to be touching on the Borg yet again.
Yeah.
Where do we leave the Borg, and are we happy with what it is? Because I think if you go back to TNG, they left off their Borg stuff with, say, First Contact and with Descent. And in both instances, I think Descent especially, we're led to believe that the Borg are again in a more precarious state than we knew them.
Right.
We get to First Contact. I don't know. The Borg are traveling back through time, doing some interesting things. We get to Voyager. It seems like it's kind of status quo once again. Do we buy the Borg in their weakened state by the time we get to the end of Voyager?
I mean, do they seem that weakened?
We have the destruction of at least this big transwarp
hub.
Yeah.
But they don't seem weak before that, really.
Yeah, and isn't it only one of seven transwarp hubs?
One of six?
Yeah.
That was my favorite Borg drone, by the way, one of six.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's from the episode Unity.
Yeah. So, I wonder just how weakened they are, because, of course, we see the destruction of this Borg queen, but I think we're led to believe that the Borg queen is kind of constantly reincarnated like a Cylon to a certain degree. So,
right.
I don't know what her fate ultimately is, and which is why, Cam, you and I have been speculating maybe the Borg queen makes yet another return in the Star Trek Picard series.
Sure. Well, I think that's a problem with making the antagonist of your finale the Borg Queen, because you can't blow up the Borg Queen or inject her with a pathogen in the finale and expect us to think there's any finality to that, because we've seen the Borg Queen blown up twice before on Voyager.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when you have Q and All Good Things, like, we know that Q is always going to be around. Like, it's more about the philosophical back and forth between these two.
It's more of an existential battle versus, sure, like, kind of a physical battle.
Like, you know, you joked off the top about Maj Kala.
I wasn't joking.
But if you made the villain of the finale Maj Kala,
yeah,
and he blew up at the end, you would have a sense of finality. You would have that sense of, okay, well, his, whatever the Kazon do in the future.
Is it Kazon Nistrum that Maj Kala was in charge?
That's right,
of.
Yeah. You know, the Kazon can do what the Kazon are going to do, but we know that the Maj Kala, you know, his impact is over. But we know with this transwarp hub, like, did they say that this was the one that connects them to the Alpha Quadrant?
They never say that's the only one that does it. Yeah. It just happens to go there.
There's just a bunch of little mini wormholes that they have access to, and this one happens to...
Which is bizarre, by the way, if you think about it. If that's been there the whole time, just saying, like, I sent a few cubes through. Yeah, we've done it. Earth's ours. Cool. All right.
Why not send, like, 100 cubes through?
Yeah, I don't know. But telling us that taking out this one is going to have some sort of severe impact on the Borg's control over the galaxy going forward.
A sort of cosmic effect on everything.
Yeah. I mean, the only question I really had was, is this pathogen going to do severe, severe damage? Because, you know, of course, famously, Picard was always refusing to introduce some sort of virus into the Borg network.
Yep.
He would grapple with that and always decided not to. If we have Janeway doing that here, how long an impact does this have? I don't really know.
My suspicion is, like, the Borg are quick to get the tourniquet out.
Oh, yeah,
I think so. You know, put an end to that appendage that is causing some problems.
Well, if they can adjust, like, to technology very quickly, like phasers, you get to hit them, like, twice before they can recalibrate themselves.
Yeah.
Don't tell me they can't recalibrate their immune system to fight off this virus or pathogen very quickly.
So maybe story-wise, this wasn't totally working for us. And then maybe character-wise, we were a little more invested in our contemporary characters. And this is my essential problem. Like, if I wanted to distill it down, is like the entire time that I'm watching this, I remember back in 2001, I'm looking at the clock.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, how much time am I going to spend with the characters after they return home? That's what I really wanted to see.
Were you getting that anxiety?
It was a lot of anxiety.
I remember having like that a lot. I'd be looking at a finale and I'd be like, oh my God, we've only got like 13 minutes. There's a lot to wrap up here.
because for me, like, Voyager was a show that it was often about kind of the cool high concept stories. When it was on a high, it was often because they were doing like really awesome high concept stories. But honestly, the reason I'm tuning in week to week is because I like the characters. I like spending time with these characters, and I want them to get that sense of satisfaction of being reunited and completing this 7-year mission to get home. And the fact that they did not give that to me, I felt was kind of reneging on that sort of social compact that they had, you know, said, like, this is about getting home. And wouldn't you think that there is going to be some sort of reunion with people?
Yeah.
Well, what, partners, yeah, and, you know, husbands and wives and families and such. You'd want to see that last moment. If you look at the last moments of, say, you know, All Good Things, then, you know, they've got the family come together and the sky's the limit, and they play cards, the cards with them. That's a lovely final moment. But we get Voyager flying into a fleet of ships, and you don't know what happens after that.
Yeah. I do wonder, though, like, it's very tough to watch this as a finale and not nitpick because of the elements we've brought up. But is this a solid, high-concept sci-fi episode?
So I was thinking about maybe if this was like a two-parter that aired midway through season 7.
Like, this is an alternate future sort of story, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if this would have worked better as just like kind of a one-off episode midway through the final season.
Like Workforce, like, yeah, where that aired.
And maybe they went in a different direction as a finale. I was ultimately, I didn't feel as if they kind of completed this journey to my satisfaction in a way. And as you guys both mentioned earlier, it's like, well, they've been journeying for about 7 years. They've been able to shave off, you know, I think they shaved off maybe 20 years from their journey through, you know, maybe Kes put them forward, or maybe a wormhole or two.
The greatest gift of all.
The greatest gift of all, you know. So maybe they shaved off another 20 years from their journey, but it's like they still had a ways to go at this point. And it's just, yeah, like, does it feel earned? And I think that's kind of the thing that's kind of...
But that's like a problem with, at least that I have personally with Voyager, is that the journey never feels like you have a great grasp on how we're getting closer and closer. Yes, they introduced the whole Pathfinder story, I think for the sole reason of trying to give that sense of them getting closer and closer.
But was it just an excuse to make friends with Barclay?
Mostly. And we'll get to Barclay, I think, in a minute, talking about him. But I mean, yeah, like... I think the show needed to do a little more just to, and you know, you could see they were trying with some superficial ideas in the sense of, well, we're going through Borg space, we're going through Kazon space. So like there was different aliens in these various spaces they were traveling through to give you a sense that they were journeying from genuine location to location. But then the Borg kind of took over the show. Yeah. So that, then it gets a little muddy. I think if this show had been made now, you would have a much clearer sense of the marking points of the journey.
Well, Scott, if we're talking about marking points, and if they were just going to do a All Good Things ripoff episode, what would you have thought of maybe if they started this, you know, kind of time jump back into season 1, where you see the reappearance of the Kazon or the Vidia, and you see how Janeway has the bun at that moment, and then you can kind of get an idea of like how far the crew has come in the years that we've gotten to know them. Neelix is even talking about getting married at this point to a woman who's age appropriate.
I was really, really angry we didn't get the wedding. That's the finale I want.
I was shocked, yeah.
What purpose would that serve? Why would you want to have that? That sort of...
More of a sense to establish just the long journey.
These marking points that Cam was alluding to.
You can see
to.
How it, they've grown and as,
yeah,
as
like
it goes.
Yeah, like the narrative, yeah, of the journey.
Even that at least gives you some sort of closure, maybe? Like they say, the journey... That is to the journey. So if you've shown that growth over 7 seasons, even if they didn't show them getting home in a way, would that have been a nice way to end it?
So, okay, that's something that probably would have left mainstream audiences quite unsatisfied at the time, but I'm okay if, like, we get that speech from Harry Kim, and he's saying it's the journey that matters, and ultimately the finale is them not getting home. It's about them continuing on the journey, and in our own imaginations, we can imagine this going forward, you know, years and years in the future, that this crew will be doing more missions, etc. I mean, don't know if audiences would have gone for
audiences
it.
Would have hated it a, yeah, lot. But I mean, can you imagine, like, the final scene is like Chakotay sitting there with Janeway, and he's like, well, Catherine, I guess we've got 16 more years together. And she's like, anything could happen, Mr. Chakotay. Anything could happen.
Yeah, like he could walk into Astrometrics for the 9th time,
yeah,
in like a single episode. Was Robert Beltran only like contracted for like one day of work for this entire finale?
Let's talk about the 7 Chakotay stuff now. But then maybe just we should go into kind of, did this serve the characters well?
Okay.
But let's talk about the Seven Chakotay, because, yeah, this is really awkward stuff.
He keeps coming in and dropping on astromestrics, and I'm just like, okay. It seems like almost like a sitcom sort of thing, where it's like, character exits, character enters. It's just like, what is going on
here? And Seven's always like, are you here in professional capacity or personal?
Does this work in the Me Too era as well, where you have, like, a commanding officer really pursuing a relationship hard with a junior officer? Or somebody who is the excuse that she's not enlisted in Starfleet, but she's, like, a member of the crew? I don't know. It's very weird to me, especially in this era.
Look, I never like to say, no, you can never do it. If it's something like this, I mean, like, maybe, but I don't think written this way. It would have to be written far more carefully, and I think a lot more attention would have to be paid to how this relationship evolved as opposed to what we got.
Yeah.
But I think the really slap in the face with this whole story is, like, we were told, like, I think it was more like Kate Mulgrew saying, like, well, she's the senior officer. She can't have relationships with the crew. But Chakotay can. Like, that's where I'm like, hold the phone.
I know. And this is also the fella that was getting mad at people for making out in the turbo lift.
Yeah. So that's where I'm like, it's a total double standard.
Yeah, Scott, I know you were a big fan of the Chakotay 7 stuff, so why don't you justify yourself?
I wish I could. I really wish I could give you something on that one. I mean, I'm a massive Chakotay fan. You know, the fight is one of my favorite episodes. I'll take that
you
back.
You have the tattoo.
Yeah. I got it when I was 16, as soon as I could. Just get it on my face now.
Your parents thought it was a bad idea. Boy, were they wrong.
They've got it too now.
The weird thing is Cam has his on his lower back.
That's right.
Yeah.
As the true rubber tree people do.
I've got the full Q one now that goes all the way down my face.
Of course, yeah.
In terms of the relationship, I just never understood why it needed to happen. I don't really mind how they did it. I just don't see the point in it.
But it's kind of a series finale trope in, like, every single show that's been long running, where, like, you get to any end of a sitcom or, I don't know, legal procedural, and all of a sudden all the characters are just pairing up, and we're meant to believe that they kind of go off into the sunset and fall in love with someone. It's in, like, almost every single finale you ever watch.
Oh yeah,
on TV.
Big time. In the 90s and the early 2000s.
Ross totally. And Rachel, think about it.
Yeah, you know?
But if you look at sorry to interrupt, but, like, we were talking about how it ended, and now we're talking about the relationship. They knew that season 7 was going to be their last season. They knew they had to write the show out. If they were going to end on them getting home, and they were going to end on this relationship, why did they not just drop some bits leading up to it?
I think they did. Like, in, like, the first, or in the few episodes leading up to it, they kind of did.
Was there, like, some bashful scenes between the two of them or something? I they're not springing to mind, but that's probably just good.
There is the episode where Seven is having, like, I believe, fantasies about Chakotay on the holodeck, and then her Borg implant starts interfering. Like, she can't have intense emotional experiences.
Is that human nature?
I think it is. Okay. I think that's exactly what it is, yeah. And I wrote it down somewhere in my, like, many, many notes, but I don't have it at the moment. But yeah, I believe you're right. But the thing was, they really set up that episode as a very tragic Seven story, saying, like, no matter how human she allows herself to continue to evolve, she will always be robbed of this element of her life. And, I mean, it's a pretty harsh ending to that episode. And I remember thinking, like, wow, that's dark. But then in this one, the doctor's like, you know what? I thought about it. I got it. Take this pill and you're good.
She was like, so how many procedures is this going to take? He's like, just one.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all.
And then he's like, do you want some help with unleashing your emotions? And she's like, I'm good. And it was, like, it was almost kind of creepy with, like, the doctor's proposition there.
But then she actually did change a little bit in the episode. Like, she seemed to express a little bit more.
Yes, she did. And which is something I do appreciate.
And that, well, I think by the sounds of the trailer we saw for Picard, that has obviously progressed over the years leading up to where we are now as well, where she's just talking like we are.
I guess Chakotay is a much better partner than we ever imagined.
They only got married in the alternate universe, I think. Yeah, I mean, the relationship, I think it might have worked, like, maybe. But it needed a lot more work, like, put into it in the writing. It's not the actor's fault they're doing what they get, but it just feels so awkward. And it's the way they just keep shoehorning Chakotay into romantic situations in this finale. This guy's the first officer. He's been on this 7-year journey. He does nothing really that interesting in this finale. It's really weak.
He's there to service another character's arc.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if Beltran is super happy with how this is, like, the end of his character, though.
Well, he might be, Tyler, because their kissing scene made the list of Star Trek magazine's sexiest scenes in Star Trek.
It was on my list.
I found it genuinely uncomfortable to watch.
So did I.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, guys...
Well, let's just talk about the other characters, because we were kind of set that up. With, like, as a finale, you look at the other ones. I mean, DS9, there is not a character who walks out of that who you don't have amazing, amazing resolution
like,
to that character.
Nog does.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think the Nog moment is better than any moment Chakotay got.
Yeah.
You know, just so think of that discrepancy there.
The worst is probably the original series with Turnabout Intruder.
Sure.
But like, most of the other ones are really good about it.
Let's think about maybe Neelix, for example.
Yeah.
It seems as if Ethan Phillips had maybe half a day on set.
Yeah.
On a view screen, and we find out that he's getting married. Okay, so you kind of have a happy-ish ending for Neelix.
They kind of wrapped him up like two episodes earlier anyway. So.
Yeah, but it's like, and I can appreciate his conclusion had already, you know, been in the works there.
Yeah.
But for a finale, it's just like, okay, like, isn't there... an imaginary Neelix in the future that we can get some sort of hint of him on this meteor colony? I don't know.
Yeah, why wouldn't they have him in the finale at the 10-year reunion?
I'm sure warp speed's going even faster by, you know, 30 years from now. So
Tom Paris broke the warp 10 to go get him.
Again. He keeps turning into a salamander over and over. Yeah. Okay, what about, you know, Harry? I love his speech there. Like, that, it's a little cheesy, but I can go with it. Where are you guys at with Harry, Scott?
I mean... I think he does fine. You can see his character progression over the 7 years when he actually isn't... I mean, he's trying to get to the wormhole, obviously. He's quite pushy about that. He pushes Tom to, you know, come up with the plan. But then he also has that scene about, you know, to the journey. So he obviously grows... In the episode, he grows a wee bit there as well.
Maybe it's already the beginnings of this alternate reality. You know, it's like, maybe that's why this alternate reality will never come to pass.
Yeah, but I feel like he actually gets, for Garrett, I mean, looking at what he actually has done over the 7 years, he actually gets quite well served in this episode, I think, compared to some of the other ones, maybe.
Yeah, like, it feels a little bit of a quick solution, because Harry Kim has never gotten a promotion on the show, you know, another pip or anything like that. And so the sense that, like, they go... No, he became a captain, don't worry. Hmm. It feels a little bit like a Band-Aid over that one. Just be like, no, don't worry, everything was good. We don't actually get to see him progress going through, like, captain training or anything like that. But I'll take it. It's fine.
No running through the corridors like Tilly or anything like that?
Never. No? Never.
Okay.
B'Elanna's arc in the contemporary period all had to do with her being a mother, which is fine. Is it too much into putting women in more of that matronly sort of role?
Well, no, I'll challenge that a little bit, because she is in engineering getting those upgrades sorted, and then keep telling her to go to sick bay, and she says no, she needs to get this sorted first. So they do give her agency in the sense of she cares about getting the ship safe before she worries about herself.
And very much her consistency as a character is tied to how much she is kind of that that engineering wonk to a certain degree. Mm-hmm.
Well, and this show is very much about, like, motherhood to a degree. You have Janeway as the grandmother of all of these crew members and guiding their journeys. And so, like, I don't think the B'Elanna one is particularly, at least, offensive to me, I guess, as a man. But, I mean, like, you know, I'd love to know if some of the female listeners feel otherwise. But, I mean, to me, it works because she's not a passive mother figure. It's not like they scuffle her off the screen. She's active in the entire experience. She, as you said, saying, you know, Tom, get on the bridge. So to me, it works, and it does tie into the themes of the series anyway.
I already mentioned this, but I did like Tom's moment in the corridor. I am a fan of him acknowledging to the audience that his home is what he's made it for the last 7 years. And so I think that is, like, even if it's only a 30-second period within the finale, it kind of ties up that character quite well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he went from sort of, I don't want to say rags to riches, but, you know, he was in a penal colony when he started the show. And by the end, he's got, you know, I think they married by that point. Did they get married in the show?
Yeah.
Twice.
Right. Okay. Kid on the way, writing horror novels as well. He's done very well for himself.
Yeah. Where are we at with maybe the Tuvok stuff? Because there's two different sorts of threads that we can go down.
They really did divide the Picard character from All Good Things in half here, where it's Tuvok having the, like, the mental issues. Like, the Tuvok stuff, I actually thought Tim Russ was really good in this episode. The scenes where he's having this breakdown, he's writing, like, all these notes and everything, and he's sort of the connection to these two timelines, I think it works, but it doesn't do a lot for the Tuvok character.
Like the contemporary one?
Yeah. Like, I don't get a lot about him returning to his family or anything.
What we do get to know, though, is that because he returns earlier than he was supposed to, we do know that he's able to stave off this sort of Vulcan dementia.
But did that not bother you that they bring that up as, like, a ticking clock in the final episode?
They could have planted seeds for that a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
But look, it puts a bit of a cap onto that as well.
Sure.
Another character, the Doctor in the alt timeline versus, you know, the contemporary timeline. His contemporary story is really just dealing with the Tom and B'Elanna labor stuff.
Right.
I've seen that in so many TV shows before. I don't know what they can do. So I guess I was more intrigued by him kind of being more of this active agent in the alternate timeline, really grilling in on one Barkley in the future.
At least they spared us in those birthing scenes of the scene where everyone's like, push, push. That cliche was not there. But yeah, the Doctor, definitely, his material was definitely weighted towards the alternate future.
Yeah.
And I did like that he was like calling out Janeway. Like he had agency in those scenes. He wasn't like a passive character.
Yeah.
He does get that little bit with Seven when he offers to give her advice with Chakotay, and that's kind of a regression for him a little bit, because he sort of gotten past that Seven crush a little bit, I felt. And
that's what I thought too, until he's making this random offer to help her with her emotional journey.
Which almost feels like it's like a grab for viewers that have come back in for the finale or something like that. Yeah. Just, oh, shucks, he's a doctor type thing, as opposed to, oh, he's grown a bit more.
What about Seven, though? We talked about the relationship with Chakotay, but, like, Seven's journey throughout this show has been very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we get, like, a great resolution.
What does home mean to her? And I think Hope and Fear, the season 4 finale, addressed that quite a bit better.
Big time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the problem is, like, her entire journey in this episode is tied to her relationship to a man.
Yeah.
And in all fairness, this man is not well served by this particular arc either.
Yeah.
You know, but it is one of those kind of tropes where, does Seven of Nine pass the Bechdel test throughout the course of this episode?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think she does, actually.
She's not even involved in sort of the Borg part of the storyline.
Which is weird.
Yeah, because it's kind of her thing. It's Janeway.
Well, the queen does appear to her in a dream and say, hey, you want to give up your crew?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, she did that little brief in the alcove, and then she collapses.
You've always been... Oh, what did you think of the Borg Queen's moment with Seven? It's like, you've always been my favorite. That's why I've let your little crew go free, and I haven't attacked them. Is that true? Do you think the Borg Queen was being genuine, or do you think she was just trying to play mind games, and they haven't been able to track the Voyager?
It's very Scooby-Doo, you know, villain of the week type thing. Oh, you kids have been getting away with it because I said so, but now I'm going to get you.
I mean, it was a bit much, though, when she ripped off her face and it was Maj Kala. But no, like, I don't know. Like, the Borg Queen is such a manipulative character. I don't know that she's being particularly sincere.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
Okay. So, with regards to maybe Janeway, as we know her in the contemporary time, I kind of like her arc in this. She might have the best arc in, like, showing her agency as a character. Sure, why the Janeway as we know it is probably like the prime Janeway, the one who's the most astute, the smartest, and the one who's kind of, she's able to convince her older antecedent that, hey, I've got a better plan than maybe what you have here.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm to me this is Janeway running at full throttle. Like, I do like Janeway, Captain Janeway, like, a lot during the course of this one.
Well, I think it's very important that she be given all of the best material in this finale, because Janeway, you know, you set her up in Caretaker, such this force of nature character, but she's also, just by virtue of being the first female captain to lead a Star Trek show, this is an incredibly important character for the legacy of the series, or the franchise, I should say. So I think it's very important that you tie her story up with all the pomp and circumstance she deserves, because Kate Mulgrew brought it through the entire 7 seasons. And I think they do a great job with these dueling Janeways. And we get to see various facets of her personality through both of them. And it is very much a love letter to that character. So, like, it's something I go back and forth on. I think it's why I give this episode maybe more of a pass, in that it feels very honest and truthful towards the character of Janeway in summing up what she means. And yes, that sacrifices the rest of the crew. And I think that's a problem for a show that pertains to be about a family.
Yeah.
But Janeway's done so well that I can always hold on to that.
So guys, as we start to wrap up here, maybe we can get our final thoughts out with regards to how this encapsulates the series' journey and whether we're satisfied as a finale. Ultimately, for me, I don't know if this is the strongest Star Trek finale we've ever had before, especially if, you know, the prime examples are All Good Things and What You Leave Behind as well. Yeah. I just feel as if it's, as you said earlier, Cam, almost like too abrupt. Like that is a common complaint among the fans. And
well, the Borg Queen feels like she's defeated very quickly.
Yeah, but it's a cool kind of defeat with like Admiral Janeway getting one over on her.
But imagine if you like just ratcheted up that tension a few extra points.
Yeah.
You would have that big explosive ending that I think this wants to deliver.
Yeah.
You know, so.
What do you think this is as a finale for you, Scott?
I mean, I've been quite critical of the episode on this podcast. And I have to look back at how I felt about it as that 14-year-old, you know, teenager watching it. I really liked it when I saw it then. I felt, you know, what is a finale supposed to be to get the Voyager home? That was their story. They got home. Do you go any deeper than that? Maybe. But and if you go deeper, you start to find these problems. But has it served its purpose of getting the crew home without, you know, stretching credulity too much? Yeah, I think it does that. I think it passes. It passes muster. But then as you start to delve into, you know, the character arcs and stuff, then you've got the issue start to come out, I think.
And it doesn't help that you have these great examples to compare it against.
Yeah.
You know, but if we put it together with, you know, say, Turnabout Intruder and These Are the Voyages, we would be like, Endgame is the best finale, you know, in Star Trek history. And so it's very troubling just because you have these high water marks. But also, and like, look, I know there's a lot of people that maybe prefer Voyager to Deep Space Nine. That's totally cool. But I think when you put Voyager next to TNG, very few people are going to say, Voyager's better than TNG. And TNG just looms so large, and that finale looms so large.
Even the uniforms, like, they're wearing in the future.
Yeah, and that to try to deliver something that's quite similar and expect to have as big an impact, it's just never going to happen. So, like, I think it works. And going outside of the Star Trek realm, finales are brutal. How many shows have we watched where the finale was lame? Or just totally underwhelming.
The vast majority of finales are bad.
Yeah. Right?
Like, mm-hmm. There's maybe, like, five exceptional finales in television history, period.
X-Files, obviously.
Well, and then maybe, like, 10, 15 really good ones.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's just a huge cliff. Because I think there's so much pressure on the writers to wrap things up in an epic sort of way that's going to be satisfying to everybody. That's just really hard to do. And I think you should just make a story that is... Don't make it for everybody. Just do what the show does best.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, whenever you see lists of the best finales, they keep bringing up the same ones. It's like, yeah, that Saint Elsewhere finale was amazing because apparently that's one of the greats. I've never seen it. But there's very much a select number that they hold up as being great. And most of them are forgotten or just kind of like, yeah, that was fine. And, you know, this is no Seinfeld finale.
No.
I think Endgame is a totally watchable, high-concept story. It's just that when you measure it against what it maybe feels like it should be, it comes up short. But I still enjoy it. Like, it's a fun two-parter. I don't find it dull to sit through. It's just in terms of giving me maybe more of the organic type of story that I want versus something that feels a little too machine-tooled. You know, it kind of comes short.
I would have been down for this being episode 20.
Yeah.
And then you have the next, you know, 5-6 episodes of the series to kind of wrap up what their lives are going to be like on Earth.
Yeah, and I just had a question for you, Scott.
Yeah.
Now, we see Von Armstrong show up as a Klingon named Korath in this episode. That character is from Star Trek The Experience in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
You are the only one of us that's been to Star Trek The Experience.
And you even just acquired a brand new denim jacket. We should say that we are actually recording this episode in Las Vegas right now in anticipation of the big STLV convention that is going to happen but mere days.
Right. So I am curious, did Endgame do Korath proud?
No.
Really?
I've met Korath. I met the,
wow.
the Klingon character. There's a couple, actually, that used to walk around The Experience. I do have a photo with him somewhere. And he was much more of a boisterous person, a character in real life, I would say. Hearty.
It wasn't Von Armstrong, I'm assuming.
So, well, I think he did like some days, and another actor did the other days.
Really?
No.
Oh, you totally had me. That was a total Barkley moment for me. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Okay, so you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in very shocked. Janeway switched to T. Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N. N as in indie game.
Wow. And Scott.
Oh, well, I mean, if you wanted to find me, you could find me at Tiberius Hardy. It's H-A-R-D-Y. Why, as in, why have I been on the show 2 weeks running? I don't know.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.